Hello there, listener, and welcome to the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy. Glad you've found us in our new spot on Saturday evenings, but just as glad if you found us in our old spots via podcast. This week, composer Jennifer Walsh on Keeping Things Irish Online, Loss, Memory and TikTok with The Caretaker, and Rob Long on the demise of micro video network Quibi. But we get started this week in County Donegal, in Falcarra to be precise, at the home of the head gardener at Glenveagh National Park, Sean O'Guihean. In the garden that surrounds his cottage near Drumnatinny Beach, O'Guihean raises a host of native plants, all carrying stories, like the rose root, or in its Irish name, Luas na Laoch, the herb of the athlete, which happens to be an adaptogen. A what now?
An adaptogen is a substance that helps the body to adapt to a new strain or stress by stimulating the body's own defensive mechanism. Natural substances in the form of plant medicines offer a gentle alternative to fast-acting synthetic chemical medicine in releasing the body's own source of energy to sustain the immune system. I was particularly interested in having a better understanding of what an adaptogen is because there's this marvellous herb that I have in my garden. It's called rose root. That's the common name for it. And the reason why it's called rose root is because the root of the herb has this rose scent off it. We have a wonderful modern text by Peter Wise Jackson. It's a book on the past and present uses of wild plants in Ireland. Then under the description of Rhodiola rosea, which is the Latin name for rose root, he gives the Gaelic name as Luas na Laoch. Laoch, as a Gaelic term, describes somebody who is a hero, a champion, a warrior, or an active youth. So this is the herb of the warrior or the active youth, and that corresponds directly with the kind of modern use that rose root has, particularly in Eastern European countries. As a herb, it is edible and it's not going to cause any ill effects when eaten in, you know, modest quantities.
So should we have a look at the harvest?
Yeah, so I've just dug up this one plant and you can see there's quite a lot to it. Like, there's so much swollen root here. Like, I've separated out all the flesh, all the sort of green parts. I'm actually going to use all these small green parts to get new plants growing. Like, there's no apparent roots at all, but I know if I put that into a bit of compost in a pot, that'll start growing straight away.
Wow. It's actually really,
so if I could leave that sitting about for a week or two and it would still be vibrant and healthy and growing. So it's almost like the plant itself displays the kind of qualities that we can actually benefit from, the qualities of being incredibly vibrant and tough and adaptable to its environment. So it's just really adapted very well to the natural conditions of the Irish landscape. And what I'm doing is I've separated all the green parts off and I've now got these big lumps of fleshy stem, and I'm just using a potato peeler to flake it. See the way there's a skin on the root? You can just peel all that away.
That's the inside that smells of the rose.
Yes. So once you've kind of clean back the skin, straight away you can smell the rosiness of it, and I'll leave them soaking in alcohol for about 6 weeks, and the alcohol goes from just a clear colour to a sort of very deep amber rich, you know, brown. And it's a sort of a micro dose that you would take or something like that. It's just a few drops of this alcohol infused with rose root you would take with spring water or sparkling water or something like that, once a day. The plant itself actually grows in very extreme locations. So it grows at high altitude in sort of the high up in the mountains where it's a very exposed environment. So it's a very tough little plant that can cope with very extreme growing conditions, you could say. So it actually grows just above the splash zone along the sea in some parts of the coast of Donegal, and it also can be found on the cliffs and the high mountains in Glenveagh National Park. So it's part of our flora. It's actually a very interesting and special and rare plant. So I'm not advocating that people go out and collect it and use it on a big scale, because we want to protect our plants in nature. So what I've been doing is I've been cultivating it, dividing it and growing on a lot of plant, so I have plenty of it to give to people if they want to have it in their gardens, but also to be able to use it myself. There's the rose root. So rose root is a little perennial too, a perennial herb, so it comes up from the ground every year. It's got these sort of glaucous pale green greyish leaves. It looks a bit like a sedum, like a succulent or a type of cactusy sort of a plant. So there's sort of numerous little leaves, and then there's a disc of red flowers that when it flowers, it's kind of red and yellow on top. It's kind of gone to seed.
And as far as adaptogens go, do we know of any others that are native to Ireland, or maybe others that are not native but that you might find growing?
Classically, there's a number of plants. So they, again, Bartram's Encyclopedia of Herbal Medicine, he talks about plants like Siberian ginseng, certain pollen extracts, shiitake mushrooms. In herbal tradition, these have the same characteristics as rose root as an adaptogen.
And it's the root of that plant that is used.
It's a real
sea
green.
Yeah, but the amazing thing is that's actually hard to kill. That thing is tough.
And then there's also a very common herb mentioned here, borage. So, you know, borage is a very popular, lovely flowering plant that's great for insects. We grow it as a flowering plant, just something for people to enjoy. But you'd also see a lot of bees and butterflies visiting the flowers. So the borage plant is also regarded as a type of adaptogen. So there's a whole number of herbs that have that particular. Echinacea would be another one, of course. My thing would be, I'm particularly interested in having a direct experience of what our own native flora, the kind of plants that grow naturally here in Ireland, and are also, it's also possible to have them in cultivation in your own garden, where you can be responsibly learning from working with these kind of herbs and also having no impact on their conservation status in the wild. One of the problems with a lot of the rarer plants that we have is that they are threatened with perhaps over-collection. So there is actually a big fashion these days. People are going out and doing a lot of foraging, looking for wild plants that are edible. And that's great. It's great to learn about all these things that are in nature. You know, something like nettles, you could also say, is a wonderful vegetable, but it also has all these medicinal values associated with them. I don't think nettles would be a problem. You couldn't over collect nettles because there's so many nettles about the place. But some of these rarer plants, I'd be just much more conscious of doing it responsibly. So really having it in cultivation and growing these things is the way to go.
Where did you find the original plant that you then brought to your garden?
Well, there's a bit of a kind of a garden story to it, in that we had it in the garden in Glenveagh as a little plant that grew in the borders. And I was kind of curious about how did that plant, you know, there's all the different ways that plants arrive into gardens. You know, people buy plants in garden centres, or they swap plants with other gardeners. But I suspect that maybe at some stage in the long history of the garden in Glenveagh, somebody might have been out on the hills in Glenveagh and found this plant and decided to bring it back for it to be grown in the garden, just as a feature, just as a Glenveagh plant. And so we had it in the borders, in the herbaceous borders, in the wall garden in Glenveagh. And just over the course of time, plants die out or disappear or get overgrown by other plants. But I noticed that actually we had lost this plant, and I thought, God, I must see about going about getting it back. And I discovered that a friend of mine, I was visiting a friend of mine's garden locally, and discovered that they had it. And so I was able to get the same plant back to Glenveagh by getting a division of it. So I grew it. So we have it now again in the herb garden in Glenveagh. And I then decided I'd like to maybe try growing it from seed just to see how easy it is. And I managed to get seed off a seed supplier in Europe from Germany, I think it was, and grew the plant. And it was Rhodiola rosea, but it was different looking Rhodiola rosea, the rose root, from the one that we have here as a native plant. And that fits as far as I'm concerned, because what we have here in Ireland is a flora that developed, whatever, 8 or 10,000 years ago, and then became isolated because Ireland became an island. And so the plants that had established themselves here then had their own characters that were fixed, you could say, a long time ago. And so then you've all the generations of plants that descended from those plants that became isolated in Ireland all that time ago. And so we have our own form, you could say, of rose root. And the wild plant that we have as a result has a particular characteristic to it, and is a very, very remarkable plant, really, as part of our native flora. The thing is, I'm not a herbalist. I'm interested in working with herbs myself for my own well-being and health reasons. So I'm making my own herbal preparations that I know are beneficial and are not harmful, and that I can take and have as part of my daily diet and intake that will, you know, keep me healthy. I'm not waiting to become depressed, or I'm not waiting for my immune system to become compromised. I'm thinking about how ways of supporting and helping my immune system and my health to remain vital and healthy, so that I can just carry on with my business, sort of thing.
That's something that we could all be considering.
Well,
for the coming period of uncertainty.
Yeah, well, I think there's an opportunity here for somebody to look at cultivating this stuff on a big enough scale that it could be made available. You know, the thing is, it's relatively unknown as a herb in Ireland. You know, there's a big revival of herbalism going on in Ireland, and a lot of herbalists are concentrating their efforts on herbs that are bought already as preparations made up. I'm really interested in the idea of how you can develop some of this stuff and transform our understanding of our own native flora, and how we can actually benefit from being more interactive and growing these things for ourselves, you know, and making them available to people, particularly something like this that actually is such a stimulant for the immune system. And really, the challenges that we're facing these days are a lot about compromised immune systems. And they also talk about nature as in the environment itself. Its immune system has been compromised. You know, a lot of the ways in which we live have impacted upon air quality and water quality and soil quality. They're all the kind of constituents of nature's immune system. You know, like we have our respiratory and circulatory systems. They're constituents of our own immune system, but nature has its immune system too. And so we also need to help nature work more positively with nature, to find ways for nature to recover its immune system. So our wild plants have a part to play in that bigger scheme of things.
Sean O'Guihean in his Donegal garden there, walking among the herbs with Culturefile's Áine Gallagher. And to find Sean's previous rambles, why not follow Culturefile where you get your podcasts? And this time on Culturefile, the return of Jennifer Walsh with her latest post from the radically permeable frontier of cyberspace. The composer has been in Ireland more than usual lately, but that hasn't stopped her being also many other places.
We were an Irish family at an American wedding. We were true to form. We were warm and friendly. We immediately asked everybody their names and where they were from. We identified and then congratulated the parents of the groom on their excellent son. We discussed in detail, for the benefit of all other guests, exactly what we were drinking. Much was made of the fact that, oh, yes, indeed, we were Irish people in Ireland, and some of us were drinking Irish Guinness. We left no stereotype unconfirmed. The point is that this was all done digitally. There we were, four different branches of an Irish family in four different locations in Ireland, crammed into the chat window of the American wedding live stream as we knocked back, at least at my location, Graham Norton Prosecco we'd gotten on offer at SuperValue. We asked where everybody was from and how old their children were. We asked how everybody knew the bride. We told the people in Oregon that we'd try to send the rain their way. We were a single DM away from inviting people whose profile pictures were eggs to come and stay with us in Ireland once all this is done with. We were an Irish family spread across Roscommon, Leitrim, Longford and Dublin, watching someone we all loved get married on the east coast of America. Watching someone we loved standing in blistering sunshine as we huddled indoors, five time zones away at the end of one of the dullest summers in memory. The point is that it meant something. It was an event rather than the chore video meetings have come to feel. The busy kindness of humans, aglow with that pre-show feeling, everybody pulling together to make a great party, even if only in the live chat. It is so easy, so effortless to be friends online when you all have people you love in common. And the fact that we are lucky enough to have people we love and to hold them in common with many others, that is what makes missing the wedding. That is what makes missing so many things at the moment not just bearable, but also beautiful.
Lemonade Maker Supreme there, Jennifer Walsh. And the music you heard was Jennifer Walsh's Number 63, music written by AI trained on Enya. And if you'd like to have another listen to see quite how that is possible, the Culture File podcast is very much the place for you. We've talked in the past about the viralizing video app TikTok and how it became a tastemaker and proving ground for pop hits by the likes of Drake and Lil Nas X. But outside pop, TikTok has some surprising effects too, and one of those has been to throw focus on the music of ambient producer The Caretaker. Culture File visited The Caretaker, aka Leyland James Kirby, at his base in Krakow back in 2014 to talk about a musical project he was creating that explored memory loss and dementia, all inspired by Stanley Kubrick's film The Shining. That music was recently picked up by TikTok users who took the challenge to video themselves reacting to this dreamy, extended, ambient journey into mental decline. Not something The Caretaker could have predicted when he first told Culture File about the origins of the project.
So tell me a little bit about the caretaker moniker, how you developed that in the first place, because it was a kind of it was a break from what you had been doing previously.
Yeah, previously I've been doing all this VVM stuff, which was completely insane, really, if you look back at it. And I was working with a friend of mine, and we just used to bounce ideas off each other a little bit. And the caretaker was my old thing, and the idea came after watching the Shining film, Stanley Kubrick's Shining film, and the scene in the ballroom with what's his name now? I can't even think. Guy called Jack Nicholson. Yeah, with Jack Nicholson, and it was just the music in the background. I love this music, so I figured it'd be quite nice to do a whole release just loosely based around this. You know, trying to source out what Kubrick used as well, which was quite difficult at the time because the music he used he deleted. It's available again now since he's died, but around this time it was very difficult to find this music. And I got lucky because in Stockport, where I was, there was an old record shop called the 78 Shop, run by these two old guys who were probably in the late 60s, and they had full catalogues of all this stuff. So I just used to go in there and ask them. They gave me the source material. I just ran with this one idea, and then I guess it developed from there into kind of looking at the way we remember things. Took the audio from the end of The Shining in because I wanted to know what it was. There were no credits on the film, and the guys actually found me the a box set of all his material. The main stuff that Kubrick used was stuff by Al Boley. So this Al Boley, the singer, who's a quite tragic singer, he died in the war. I think a bomb landed on his doorstep. So it's quite haunting before, you know. I mean, the music itself is very haunting because they're singing about or through this period of loss between both world wars. So it's a lot of this is like, yeah, you'll be going and we probably won't see you come back. It's always this very strange atmosphere. So that added to it, I guess. They actually say he would have been bigger than, maybe it was Bing Crosby, one of these. He would have actually been bigger if he'd have survived. I mean, honestly, those guys were incredible, absolutely incredible in this shop. They gave me the source material. I just ran with this one idea, and then I guess it developed from there into kind of looking at the way we remember things.
Say I surrender all my love to you. Midnight brought a sweet romance.
What they could remember, and I suppose the idea of memory became quite important in that project.
I mean, I think the whole thing is like Jack Nicholson's character in the thing, I guess, having this breakdown, and again, that's his memory playing tricks on him. And I don't know, I was just looking at things and thinking, right, you know, maybe it's a good area to kind of develop a bit more, looking into like brain disorders and why. It's quite interesting that when we get older, the last thing to go if we have Alzheimer's or something like this is the musical memory. That's it, you know, it's well known. This is why you get these crazy videos on YouTube of, I don't know, 70, 80-year-old people being played music from when they were kids. And these people will just be kind of almost in mute states. But they'll just smile as soon as they hear these sounds. It's quite incredible, really. Yeah, it's quite interesting when you start approaching things from, like, right, what can we make which kind of puts you in that kind of mental state when you listen to it, or you can kind of empathise with somebody who's suffering that, because it must be horrible, you know, to be in this kind of limbo state in I guess these endless loops, you know, which is why then I started looping things instead of playing things as whole. I had some people contacting me who said, you know, maybe the parents had suffered from it and they found it very interesting listening to it, and a few people actually told me that they understood it a little bit more after listening to that in a strange way, because that's something I didn't expect when I was doing it, because I have no first-hand experience with anyone close suffering from Alzheimer's.
The Caretaker there in the album Everywhere at the End of Time in its final 6 hours of glory is available from bandcamp.com. And finally this weekly, it's time for our transatlantic correspondent to go on the internet and order some stuff, get struck with buyer's hangover, and somewhere in all of that, find a trenchant metaphor for developments in the digital media sphere. Yeah, just another martini shot from Rob Long.
This is Rob Long with Martini Shot. A friend of mine has a bad habit of pouring himself a big glass of wine in the evening, sometimes more than one, and then going shopping on the internet. And then a few days later, the delivery guys bring him a mystery package. Sometimes it's stuff he needs, pen refills or a USB drive or a new box of printer ink, but sometimes it's stuff that only seems useful and imperative after a few glasses of wine or whiskey, late at night, when there's no one else awake or around to tell him to just close the lid of the MacBook Pro and go to bed. That's when he opens up the package and pulls out skinny jeans or a toothbrush sanitizer or one of those travel pillows that looks like a toilet seat. And the stuff sits on the kitchen counter in silent reproach. Look at what you did, it all seems to say. And he ends up sending most of it back, which you can almost always do, though they usually ask why. Wrong size? Not as described? Doesn't fit? Though never allowing you to tell them the real reason, which was judgment impaired by the following: long day, skipped dinner, 3 glasses of Cabernet, Wi-Fi. That's when the phrase, "it seemed like a good idea at the time," really comes into its own. Less than a year ago, a Hollywood insider sent me a text with a link to the most recent announcement about a new company, Quibi, which was founded by Jeffrey Katzenberg, a show business entrepreneur and hugely successful producer, and Meg Whitman, who ran eBay and Hewlett-Packard and almost became the governor of the state of California. Quibi is, or spoiler alert, was, a new entertainment company focusing on short stuff, daily episodes of longer stories, built for and optimized for your phone. My friend sent along the link with a message, "Never gonna work," which is something people say all the time, as if it's obvious. My friend was saying to me essentially that the venture was doomed to fail because people don't want to watch short things, short bursts, 10-minute bits of funny or scary or moving stories on their phones. And I can say, for me at least, they do. There are dozens of hilarious people on Instagram and TikTok doing jokes and sketches and bursts of a few minutes apiece. Snapchat is worth about $50 billion doing just that. That's what show business is at its essence, just taking campfire storytellers and street corner singers and subway station jugglers and dressing them up a bit with better lighting and sound and maybe a star or two, nothing wrong with that, and then offering it up to an audience. Never gonna work. It already sort of does. But Quibi, the business started to do exactly that, announced this week that they were folding up the business. It seemed like a good idea at the time, was the gist of the announcement, and people, like my texting friend, seemed jubilant, as if the failure of an entertainment industry business trying to innovate and adapt is something to cheer for. I disagree. In the not-far-off future, someone is going to make a Quibi-like service work and thrive, just as at some point I'm going to look at all of that stuff on my kitchen table and decide they were smart purchases all along. You knew it was me buying that stuff, right? I said a friend, but that was just another thing that seemed like a good idea at the time. And that's it for this week. Next week, we'll delay for Martini Shot. This is Rob Long.
And as Rob points out there, he'll be back again next week for another free pour of the producer's favourite refreshment. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more imaginary intoxication next Saturday tea time here on RTE Lyric FM and in your podcast feeds even before that. Till then, bye now.